Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, it seems like every few years lately, there's a scare of a new global pandemic. SARS and bird flu and swine flu, West Nile and Ebola have all been trumpeted as disasters in the making, and then nothing much happens, at least in the U.S. In late 2015, though, a new threat, the Zika virus, seemed to spring out of nowhere when it suddenly reached pandemic levels in Mexico, Central America, the Caribbean, and South America. And this one seems different. It spreads through mosquitoes and has particularly devastating effects on pregnant women whose babies are born with microcephaly and other severe brain problems. And now we're learning that Zika infections in adults can result in Guillain-Barré syndrome, a potentially life-threatening neurological disorder. So the Zika outbreak may end up having as big an effect on the Olympics this summer in Rio as the outbreak of World War II had on the 1940 Olympics in Tokyo. On American Variety today, we're going to take an in-depth look at the Zika virus and try to get a better sense of how big a threat it is to us here in the U.S. Helen Branswell is my guest this week. She's a veteran infectious disease and public health reporter who's been covering Zika extensively at STAT, a news organization focused on healthcare, science, and medicine. Helen has covered the virus from the very beginning when the CDC first announced that it might be tied to the rise in microcephaly cases in Brazil. And since then, she's written on the race to develop a Zika vaccine, the lingering questions about the virus, and many other issues as this story develops. Welcome, Helen.
Hi, thanks very much for having me.
Thanks for being on. We first heard about it in Brazil, but it was already prevalent in other parts of the world before then. So when did Zika originate?
Well, you know, to be honest, there's no way of knowing how long the virus has been out there in nature and the forests of Uganda where it was first discovered. In 1947, it was found in a monkey in Uganda, and so the world has known about it for decades. But it hasn't been studied very much because it hasn't really caused humans any significant problems up until recently. In the intervening decades, there were occasional human cases diagnosed. And there was probably more of it because it looks a bit like dengue fever. The symptoms are very much like dengue. So it might have been missed, but it wasn't really causing any trouble, so no one spent much time studying it. And that, of course, has changed dramatically over the last few months.
So since it kind of jumped up on the radar of medical researchers and public health officials, what has its path been around the world so far since that time?
There are two strains of the virus. They're related, but they're not identical. One is the virus that is found circulating in Africa, and another is an Asian strain. And a few years ago, that strain seemed to start to move. Of course, there's no real way of knowing how it got from point A to point B, except, you know, in broad brushstrokes, you would assume it was in an infected person. But it popped up in a Pacific island called Yap in 2007 and caused an outbreak there. It was significant. There were some studies done. But the problems that are being seen with it now were not observed there, perhaps because the population isn't that large. Then in 2013-2014, it popped up in French Polynesia, started to infect a lot of people. I think there they estimated that within about a year, something like 75% of the population had been infected. And then it made its way to South America and to Brazil, where it may have entered Brazil in 2014 or so. It was only really noticed there last spring. And when it hit a place like Brazil with a huge population and lots of people started to become infected, that's when the side effects, which are probably rare, started to be noticed because so many people were being infected.
So has Zika made it to the U.S. so far, do we know?
Yes, it has. I mean, in infected travelers. So there's a lot of travel between South America and the Caribbean and the United States.
Sure.
And a lot of people who've come back from countries where Zika is spreading have come back infected with the virus and discovered that they were sick after they came home, have been tested, and have tested positive. In fact, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention release a list every week of how many cases have been found. This week's list, which was issued on Wednesday, says that so far there have been 426 people who've come back to the United States and tested positive for Zika. But these are all travel cases, people who caught it abroad and came home with it. There are no cases so far that have been detected where somebody in the United States contracted it from a mosquito in the United States.
Well, I guess it's only a matter of time. And also, I guess, if travelers import the virus in their bodies into the U.S., isn't it the case that all it takes is for a mosquito to bite that person and then that mosquito can transmit it to another person, or is that not the case?
Well, that's the general pattern, but it has to be the right type of mosquito. It's known that a type of mosquito called Aedes aegypti transmits Zika virus, and there are populations of Aedes aegypti mosquitoes in parts of the United States, typically Florida, the southern part of Texas, maybe along the Gulf Coast, and then up into pockets of California. But those mosquitoes are not found, for instance, in Wyoming and other places further north. There's another kind of mosquito. It's a different species but related, called Aedes albopictus, which is suspected to be able to transmit Zika, and that mosquito is found further north. But at this point, it's not clear whether or not they're going to turn out to be what's called a competent vector for Zika, whether they'll be able to spread it well. So researchers are trying to test those mosquitoes, but it's going to take a little time to come up with answers about whether they are actually going to play a role in the spread of Zika. But back to your original question, yes, it's true. Somebody who's infected and brings the virus home in their bloodstream, if that person is bitten by the right type of mosquito while they still have the virus in their blood, that can infect the mosquito, and the mosquito can go on to infect other people. Health officials in the U.S. have warned that that likely will happen at some point this summer.
Well, so, for the time being, it sounds like it's more of a threat in tropical areas, in areas I'm thinking that don't freeze during the winter. So the Aedes aegypti mosquito, I believe, lives in standing enclosed water. In other words, containers of water, a bucket or a discarded tire, not in bodies of water, like lakes or ponds or whatever, but just containers. And so, but is that the case then? It looks like it's more of a threat in the tropical areas and in the warmer areas of the country so far.
Well, certainly so far. I mean, for instance, it's spreading in Puerto Rico. They've had a lot of cases in Puerto Rico so far, and that's a real concern because people in Puerto Rico often don't have screens on their homes and may not have air conditioning. So they're exposed to mosquitoes a lot more than people on the continental, in the continental United States might be. Also, it's been cold in many parts of the United States, so that's not prime mosquito time. We are, though, moving towards the time of the year when mosquitoes will become more active and will be more present in our lives. And unfortunately, the risk, which can't be really quantified at this point, it will rise as we get into mosquito season.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Helen Branswell, who is a public health reporter, about the Zika virus that we've all heard about, but I think don't know that much about, and probably all feel like we don't know enough about it because the threat seems to be there and seems to be growing, and it seems like it may not be one of these sort of phantom threats that appear every now and then disappear. But this one is carried by mosquitoes, and there are mosquitoes pretty much everywhere, even though it's carried by a particular species of mosquito that's more prevalent in the south. But it sounds like, from what Helen was saying a minute ago, that it may also be carried to some extent by mosquitoes that are more broadly distributed around the U.S. So, Helen, does every pregnant woman infected with Zika end up having a child with microcephaly? I think you said it's kind of rare, those side effects.
At this point, it's a very worrisome thing, obviously, and any woman who's pregnant and has had Zika, I'm sure, has a lot of concern. At this point, it's not known how often infection in pregnancy will lead to developmental problems in the fetus that the woman is carrying. One thing does seem clear. it's not every case. There have been women who've been infected who have given birth to healthy babies. But at this point, they just can't quantify how often it happens. There have been a couple of studies, but because this is so new, there's not a definitive answer. Some scientists looked at the outbreak that happened in French Polynesia that I mentioned earlier, and based on the calculations that they did, they estimated that about 1 in 100 women who was infected during pregnancy would give birth to a baby with microcephaly.
Okay.
But another study that was done in Brazil that followed a group of women who were infected during pregnancy came up with a more alarming number. They suggested about 29% of infants born to women who had been infected in pregnancy would have some kind of birth defect, neurological birth defect. Not necessarily microcephaly, but other, you know, they've been testing these newborns, doing brain imaging and hearing tests and other vision tests and other things, and have determined that, first of all, microcephaly isn't the only birth defect that some of these babies are being born with, and that, in fact, it's maybe the tip of the iceberg, and that fairly significant portion, about 30% of the infants that they saw had some kind of birth defect. That study, those researchers are continuing to study more babies that have been born, and may have to adjust their numbers as they look at more cases. But it's going to take a little longer for us to see sort of what the true picture of congenital Yuka syndrome is going to be.
Well, given all of that uncertainty, one way or another, it's still obvious that a pregnant woman does not want to get Zika virus. And even apart
That's absolutely true. And in fact, you know, the CDC has been very clear from the start, really, that this virus, the biggest risk this virus poses is to developing fetuses, and the best way to protect them is to try to make sure that the women who are carrying them don't get infected, which is why they took the quite unusual step of advising women not to travel to places where Zika is spreading. You know, that's not a kind of recommendation that the CDC would make lightly, because obviously people have to travel for a variety of reasons. It's not easy to say to somebody, you know, don't go there. But they have said repeatedly about a bunch of different places, please don't go there if you're pregnant.
Well, especially in the case of the Summer Olympics, scheduled to start summer 2016 in Rio de Janeiro. I mean, that's on top of the water quality problems that have been in the news about water in Rio. And now this, boy, that's pretty devastating for the Summer Olympics. I mean, it may end up, as I said at the outset of the show, it may end up basically killing the Olympics, because nobody wants to go where there's some sort of epidemic, and you're sitting outside in many of these venues and you're likely to get bit by something. I mean, that's just crazy. So, but, you know, we've talked about the symptoms in women, in particularly pregnant women, who may pass things on, birth defects, to their children. And I guess briefly we should say that microcephaly is a condition where the brain of a child is born very small. It's a very tiny brain, and they just don't develop normally. So it's a very severe birth defect. But apart from those fetal symptoms, what are the symptoms in adults? And are they treatable?
As I mentioned before, some of the side effects of Zika infection were not clear previously and have only come into view since it got into large populations, as it has in the case of Brazil, for instance. What they're seeing is that people who have been infected, some people who have been infected with Zika, go on to develop a condition shortly afterwards called Guillain-Barré syndrome. It's also known as GBS, which is much easier to say. That's a condition where you develop paralysis. It's a progressive paralysis. It starts from the feet up and moves up the legs and into the torso and the chest. And often people who develop GBS need to be in ICUs on breathing assistance because they can't breathe for themselves for a period of time. Most people who get GBS will recover, but a portion of the people who develop it do die. GBS is a condition that can be triggered by a bunch of different things. For instance, sometimes people who are infected with influenza go on to develop Guillain-Barré syndrome. There are a number of different infections that can trigger Guillain-Barré syndrome, including quite common food poisoning called Campylobacter. But it's become clear in the last little while that GBS is also linked to Zika infection. They don't really know at this point what percentage of adults who become infected with Zika will go on to develop GBS. It's probably a small number, you know, under 1%, but how big the risk is isn't clear yet.
Okay, so that's pretty rare, but I mean, most people who get Zika virus infection don't get GBS, so what do they get? I mean, is it basically like a common cold, or is it a flu-like symptom? And, you know, what is it, and how do you treat it, if at all, and how long does it last?
That's the really puzzling thing about this virus. It is such a paradoxical thing. Most people who get infected with Zika don't even know they're infected with Zika. They don't even have symptoms at all, so they, you know, the estimate is that sort of 1 in 5 people who become infected will have some symptoms, and 4 in 5 will have what's called asymptomatic infection. Of the 1 in 5 who do have symptoms, it's typically a rash and sometimes conjunctivitis, red, pink eyes. They may have a fever. They may experience sort of flu-like symptoms, achiness. It's generally mild and short-lived. There is no specific medicine you can take. You probably take something like acetaminophen or ibuprofen to take care of the flu-like symptoms. But in most cases, it's a very mild infection and resolves itself in a few days.
Okay, so I'm beginning to see the bottom line here, which is that unless you're pregnant, and unless you're one of the very unlucky few, the 1% or so who get Guillain-Barré syndrome, it's not that much of a big deal to have this. But the big deal may be that it becomes broadly spread throughout the population so that Aedes aegypti and maybe other mosquitoes spread it very widely, and it becomes something that a lot of people have. And then that 1% and that the pregnant woman phenomenon becomes a much more serious deal in the U.S. So that seems to be the big risk to me, is that it becomes very broadly distributed around the population.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. There is one thing, though, that we haven't talked about yet, and that's that the fact that another one of Zika's tricks is that it seems to men who become infected can emit Zika virus in semen for weeks after having been infected,
They're
not really clear yet how long. And that's, of course, a danger because anybody whose partner is pregnant, a man could actually infect his partner while she's pregnant if they have unprotected sex.
Or she becomes pregnant through the sex, and either way.
Yes, so. Exactly. So this is something that wasn't known about Zika until very recently, that it's actually sexually transmitted. It's not clear at this point how often it's sexually transmitted. The experts think it's probably rare. But as more Zika cases are emerging, they're seeing this more often. So, for instance, there have been 8 or 9 countries now that have reported Zika infections in people who didn't travel, in women who didn't travel outside the country, and in one case in a man who had a male partner. So they can tell the partner traveled. The person who got infected, who stayed home, didn't. So they can tell that the transmission, route of transmission was through sex. So as a consequence of this, health authorities like the CDC have suggested that people who are trying to conceive should be very careful and and in fact, couples where a man has traveled to a Zika zone and has become infected. When he comes home, he should be careful about having sex with his partner. They're suggesting that women who've been infected should wait 8 weeks before trying to conceive, and that men who have been infected should use a condom or abstain from sex for 6 months after having been infected if there's a risk that their partner could become pregnant.
And the catch there is that assuming they know they're infected.
Yeah, that is of course, part of the problem.
And assuming they do follow that that guideline, which many people will not. I mean, you talked about Puerto Rico with people living without air conditioning and with no screens in their windows, and I guess they just live with mosquitoes all the time. So, and you mentioned that, up to 75% of the people in French Polynesia had become infected. So let's say if more than half the people in Puerto Rico end up being affected, you can't tell them all, folks, don't have sex anymore. so this could get out of hand quickly.
Authorities are really concerned about Puerto Rico. They really do feel that there could be a big problem there. It's something that they're really watching very closely and trying to figure out how best to help women there who are pregnant to protect themselves.
And Cuba, which is about to be open to American tourism for the first time and has been open to European tourism for a long time. So, yeah, so the hot spots can spread to other areas until much of the world eventually becomes a hot spot. In the very beginning of the AIDS virus, which was only transmissible through bodily fluids, I remember worrying that the virus could mutate and become something that could be transmitted by mosquitoes, and then we'd really have a situation much greater than the already terrible situation that we had on our hands then. So this is not as devastating a disease, but it could be much more broadly transmissible like that throughout all of the world, not just the third world and tropical climes, but everywhere, so that's I guess the real boogeyman associated with this virus.
Well, again, unless they see that it can be carried by other types of mosquitoes, you'd only really expect it to spread in places where you have Aedes aegypti mosquitoes and maybe Aedes albopictus mosquitoes. I don't think, for instance, that Northern Europe is in much danger of having big outbreaks of Zika, and you need the mosquito.
Do we know if the virus itself can survive over winters with hard freezing temperatures, like, 15 degrees, 20 degrees, or 0 degrees, or whatever? Can the virus itself live? Is there a freeze line the virus can't extend beyond? Do you know?
Well, it has to be in something, right? It has to be in a person, or it has to be in mosquitoes, or in Africa. Primates can be infected, but that's not part of the equation here. People typically get rid of it pretty quickly, with the exception of the semen issue that I mentioned before. In order for it to remain in an area, like get into an area and stay there, it has to be something that's called vertical transfer. One generation of mosquitoes passing it to the next generation of mosquitoes in eggs. And at this point, they're not 100% certain whether that can happen. I think they think in rare instances it could happen, but in general it doesn't happen. So probably, if they're right about that, probably a hard frost will protect areas.
Yeah, I was thinking about the mosquitoes, not the people. Obviously, the people aren't going to freeze solid, but the mosquitoes would. So,
of course.
Mosquitoes would. So if it kept mosquitoes from moving it and transmitting it further north than the northern part of the temperate zone, then that would be a good thing, at least for the northern part of the U.S. The worry, too, would be that it might mutate to a more severe illness, and I don't know what the odds are of that. That's what they were worried about with SARS and bird flu, and it didn't really happen, but the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918 to 1919 that a lot of people have heard about killed 50 to 100 million people worldwide, which was up to 5% of the whole world's population at the time. I mean, even more than the bubonic plague killed back in the Middle Ages. So it was one of the deadliest natural disasters in human history. And we have a lot more prevention and treatment tools now at our disposal, but there's still no cure for Zika, and there are a lot more people. So that's, I guess, the risk, is that the potential impact is expanded because humanity's expanded.
Yes, certainly. I mean, one of the saving graces, I guess, is that, I mean, when you're looking at Zika and comparing it to something like the Spanish flu, is that it's not spread by coughs and sneezes. I mean, one of the problems with influenza is that it is very easily spread from person to person. Zika requires that sort of intermediate step of mosquitoes. And currently, as you mentioned, for most people, it is really not a huge risk at this point. Will that change in the future? That's not knowable. But, at the moment, the risk really is for developing fetuses, and the focus should probably stay on, making sure that pregnant women don't get infected, if that's at all possible.
So, Helen, we just have a minute or so left, but just briefly, what can people do to minimize the risk where they are?
Well, some of what we already do is going to protect us anyways. And when we were talking about Puerto Rico and the fact that people often don't have screens or may not have air conditioning, one thing that scientists believe about sort of the continental United States is that the way we live, with screens on houses and doors, like windows and doors, with air conditioning in cars, will actually protect us to a degree. For instance, dengue fever spreads the same way and by the same mosquitoes. And they've seen in the past when there have been dengue outbreaks in Mexico along the border, you get occasional cases in Texas, for instance, but not as large an outbreak as you would get in Mexico. And they feel that that's because of the way we live. And so we may have some protection built in right there. The other thing to do, and it's smart for a variety of reasons, is use mosquito repellent.
Yeah, sure. And also, we mentioned that breed of mosquito, that species of mosquito lives and breeds in standing containers. So just empty out your flower pots outside and get rid of the old a tire that's back at the back of your property or whatever. Anything that will hold water like that, just empty it out. You can even pour a little bit of like oil if you've got a stump, tree stump that holds water when it rains. You can pour a few drops of oil and it will kill the mosquito larvae and keep them from getting to the air and breathing. And obviously another thing, I guess, is to not travel to high-risk areas. Hate to say it, but don't go to Brazil or don't go to Puerto Rico. Just try to be aware of the risk of that kind of thing. And if you do, wear long sleeves and wear insect repellent, So I guess just use common sense to try to avoid getting bit by mosquitoes is what it boils down to. We've, talked a lot about Zika virus, but there's a lot more to learn if you're interested. And you can learn a lot more by going to statnews.com, which is where Helen works, statnews, statnews.com. And I guess there's a tab there for staff, and then you can look her up, Helen Branswell, Branswell. Or you can follow her on Twitter at Helen Branswell. There's a lot of articles. I've looked on the Stat News website. There's a lot of articles on different aspects of this and other infectious diseases, which if you're interested in that, you can learn more broadly about it. But Helen, I want to thank you so much for being on with us in American Variety. It's been interesting and informative, and hopefully will help people avoid getting sick.
Well, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.